Prepare yourself for invasion. This is Indie Invasion. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to the next episode of Indie Invasion. This is Mac here with the amazing and the indomitable Eric of Huffman Worldwide. So hello, Eric.
Welcome, all you indie listeners.
I probably just killed the meter on that one.
That's all right. That's why we edit, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so first off, guys, welcome to the show. We're glad you tuned in. And most important, we're going to get this one out of the way. We got our first patron on Patreon.
Woo! Ding, 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 ding.
Ding, ding, ding. And so big shout out to Jim, the tabletop engineer, Kelly. So not only are we giving him a shout out as our first patron, but we also have mentioned before, we'll send you over to his YouTube channel and his Facebook group because he is a fantastic terrain builder. So Get over there, check him out. And actually, Eric, we were chatting about our Patreon. What exactly were we chatting about for our Patreon there with our first patron?
Looking at you with your lavender headphones and me with my Nightmare Before Christmas headphones. We need some headphones.
So we were starting out the show, guys, and we looked at each other because when we record on video as well. And we both have our children's headphones on. I have my daughter's headphones on, and Eric has his son's headphones on.
Yours look like they're maxed out for adjustment.
Yeah, they're about max melon size for me. So, but on the plus side, my daughter does have an afro, so she generally needs bigger headphones anyway. So they're much closer to fitting me than say if I was wearing my youngest son's, then I'd only have one earphone on. But on to bigger and better things. That's why we have patrons, guys. That's why we need patrons, guys, because we need to stop wearing our children's headphones. But forget, seriously though, you can check out our Patreon, and also you can check out Unipolar Games, where we have some really cool merchandise. We have t-shirts, dice trays, and coffee mugs. Get over and check those out. They are really cool. Good t-shirts, awesome coffee mugs. I'm using my coffee mug as we speak.
Awesome. And what else new we have? We have we've been pretty busy lately. We've got some new videos up, Mac. I just did one the other day and you posted it up. Basically kind of do something like first impressions of these new games we're getting into, and kind of reflects me being a newbie into some of these independent games and just what my first ideas of a game is, you know, what kind of drew me in. And Hopefully if anybody's kind of interested by that, they may check it out and kind of helps them, give them a brief overview of the game, just First glance type of thing. And then you had one too. You're doing some new projects.
Yeah, I just threw one up today. I figured instead of just taking pictures of my tables that we play on here at my house frequently, that I would do a little video for how I set up tables and what I have going on and just kind of share some of the terrain that I have. And I shared today, I posted the video actually, and it was for Bushido, because that'll take us right into the next thing that's been going on. Segue, not the kind you ride, but yeah, that'll segue us right in. I put up the Bushido video because I've had the opportunity to play Bushido. Now I've had that for a while.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
And we play so many games. To be perfectly honest, I just didn't want to read the rule book. I didn't. I was like, no, not another rule book.
That's different from you. I thought that's how you relax, is reading
the rule book. I do. I love to. But it was just one of those ones where it was like, no, I'm not. I just wasn't feeling it. And then Raul said, well, I'll read it. I said, you are on, my friend. You read the rules. You come show me how to play for a change. And that's exactly what we did. And we played. And I got to say, it was a lot of fun. Super fast, pretty easy, little bit of a learning curve. But that's just because of the way the mechanics of the system are. Not getting into that. But it was a really really fun game, and it's got beautiful miniatures. I've had a bunch of the miniatures and use them in different games. I've had them for a while. really, really nice minis. And it was just a lot of fun. And then my son came over the other night and Raul showed him how to play too. So now we have a massive player base of three Bushido players in the area.
You got a player group,
right?
Well, that's cool. That's cool. So does the game work where it's skirmish, right? You just have a couple models, small model count, and
It's
scenario based. Is it
very much scenario based? Okay. Haven't really played enough to know how deep the narrative goes. I haven't had an opportunity to dive into the fluff, but there are enough factions with enough smatterings here and there that it strikes me in a first impression, you know, like you do, Eric, it strikes me in a first impression that it's going to be real heavily narrative. And I love that. So 2x2, quick game. Well, let me rephrase that. It's supposed to be a quick game, but when you're learning how to play it's kind of a 40K length game. So that's okay though. We had a lot of fun. It was a really fun game.
So you're getting some games in right now. You had another game that you played recently with Alan.
Yeah, we did. And then we just did the interview with Robert as well over at Table Salt Games. We played Battle Space, which was really cool. We already posted the interview. I haven't done the flip through yet. I'm going to do a flip through of the rule book.
Okay.
I believe I paid a massive $12 on Wargame Vault for everything that there is. So he's got the Battle Space core rule book. He's got the Navy SEALs expansion. And then there is a Memorial Day scenario. And the Memorial Day scenario was free. That was a free download. But it was $12. I downloaded it, took it down to Staples and printed it out, got it spiral bound. And again, fun game, ultra modern skirmish warfare and solo play.
So that's great for a lot of you guys listening out there that have basically lost your play group because a lot of stores are not allowing in-store play. I'm included in that. I'm very jealous, Mac, that you're getting some games in. Granted, it's at home, but you know.
Well, I do have the gamer dungeon, so I got I got the room for it.
I might have to twist some arms here at the house and maybe get the wife to play games with me and say, yeah, you want to roll some dice. You like rolling dice.
Yeah, you could just move down here, I keep telling you. Some of you out there in listener land are going to get that joke that should immediately be followed by ding.
Yeah.
Some of you will get that. Keep hanging around long enough and the rest of you will too.
Yeah, we have a lot of distance in between us. You know, we're recording in different states. And we're in two different time zones right now.
We are in two different time zones. That's right. That's right. Yeah, so Battle Space was fun. Get over and check that out at Wargame Vault. They also have a Facebook group that's pretty active. Robert actually just posted another playthrough. Pretty good quality videos. I like the quality of the videos. Good bat reps. They're not too long. And gets you right into the rules of the game. And I got another game in too.
Oh, man.
Killing it, right?
Killing it.
But this one's going to make Eric mad. So go ahead and get your mad out. Go ahead.
Okay. I
played Wild West Exodus.
Okay.
Because I love Wild West Exodus. Mm-hmm. But I did not play second edition Wild West Exodus. I played first edition Wild West Exodus.
You guys can't see it, but I'm shaking my head at him right now. Let's get it straight. It's not that I don't like first edition. It's just I've moved on.
Well, I haven't, okay? I am clinging desperately to first edition. But now we've had this discussion before because Wild West Exodus is actually the game that Eric and I met over at Adepticon in 2017. In fact, I don't know if it was the first game you played that night, but it was the first game I played that night was against you.
I think it may have been. Because that was in a tournament. It was the smaller tournament that they used to do where you don't have as many models under first edition rules. And we basically just threw down and just did whatever. We were like, well, I want to do this and have fun.
Yeah, absolutely. But so we've had this discussion before. It's not that I don't like the second edition rules. I actually do. I was part of the alpha test team for them. But I like them for what War Cradle is coming out with. which is mm-hmm. Lost World Exodus, because in my heart, Wild West Exodus is the first edition rules to me. That's what it is. So there's nothing wrong with the rules. The rules are actually good. They're updated frequently. The power creep that goes back and forth, since everything is digital, it's easily mm-hmm. fixed. So there's so many positives about the second edition, but it's just not, it's not the sweet spot for me with that game. But I am certain, and I'm still buying the models, but I'm buying them so that when Lost World Exodus finally comes out, I'm gonna be ready.
Yeah.
So yep. That's everything that I've played. Did you get to play anything?
No.
Oh man.
Put some paint on some models a lot lately.
Well, that's good.
So
What have you gotten painted then?
I've been working on Retro Ray Gun lately, since we kind of dove into this game. You know, we've talked to the creators already. We both have done a little video sneak peek into the book. I did the first impressions one. And we're both kind of getting into that game, and a lot of it is gonna, you know, we're gonna talk a little bit more about it in today's episode, but we like the world, and the models themselves is what drew us both in for the kind of like Burrows and Badgers. The models are just, they're fun to paint. They don't have a thousand skulls and belt buckles and straps on them that you have to use a paintbrush that's basically two hairs to paint the things.
Yeah.
And you know, you can have fun painting them and doing whatever you want paint scheme wise. Like, so last night I was working on, I got one of the factions as big giant robots.
Oh yeah.
And I came up, for a while when I was building them and we were getting in the game, I'm like, what am I going to paint these? I want to be different. I don't want to paint them just silver. You know, that's kind of a classic color, which is what the game's take is on the old era. But I wanted to do something different that was, you know, more me. And I'm sitting there trying to think. And in the room that I'm recording at, I have, you know, like many of us that are nerds, we have, you know, comic book stuff here and there and whatever. Well, I have some Dr. Doom action figures, one of my favorite villains, and he's just sitting there staring at me, you know, a typical Dr. Doom stare of you will listen to me. So it inspired me to take his color scheme and put them on the robots. And I have to say, they're turning out pretty good.
Man.
I did another one last night and I liked them. And then I switched off to another faction that I got, and I'm painting lots of purples and pinks and having fun with that. So it's just, it's one of those models sculpts that are just, I'm having fun painting.
They are a lot of fun. They're a whole lot of fun. The last thing that I had going on actually just happened.
I think you need to reserve your room for that, man.
So as everybody knows, if you listen, I am a Twisted junkie when it comes to the world of Twisted, the Minions of the Engine by Demented Games. That is just, I love that game. I love the guys that created it. I love the story. I love the models. There's just nothing about the game that I don't like. And usually there's something that gets house ruled at my house in a game. The only thing that gets house ruled in Twisted is me adding extra stuff to it. And that's just because it doesn't exist.
That's why you're buying all these extra models.
Right, exactly. And you know, the great thing about it is, I think for me anyway, a game that makes me want to do that is that's the game for me, because there are so many fantastic sculptors and designers out there. And you look at these models and you go, well, I can't think of anything I'm going to use that for. Well, when you find a game that provides you with a narrative to expand on, then all of a sudden you're like, oh, now I know what I can use all these miniatures for.
Yeah.
And then you can have your wife get mad at you because you spent too much money on models or whatever. I'm very blessed that
neither one of our wives do that. No, we're both pretty lucky.
No, but someone out there probably struggles with that, and we are sorry for you, because we don't. But anyway, what I found was, I'm always trying to decide what the next piece of my Twisted world is, And for now, it is going to be an asylum. So I'm building an asylum. And from the company Tabletop Gamer Store, I found one, a steampunk Victorian modular MDF asylum.
I like the modular part, so you can kind of vary it up with your other terrain that you have, or just the possibilities of building a board is just, it opens up. You know, you can do whatever you want.
So I pulled the trigger on that about 30 minutes ago.
I saw your picture and I just started laughing.
And then after I pulled the trigger on it, I went, man, that thing's modular. I probably need a second one so I can make it bigger. So if my oldest son is listening, this birthday is coming.
That's true. So do you got a ground floor room with your name in that?
I am the chief physician of said facility. Stonehurst Asylum. Check that movie out and you'll know what I'm talking about.
Oh man. Well, I'm excited to see this thing on the board because the pictures that I saw that you posted, that thing looks huge. It looks huge. Yeah,
it's going to be a beauty.
I don't think that's going to be on a 2x2 board, is it?
No. As much as I've been playing on 2x2 boards lately, I just can't bring myself to put Twisted on a 2x2 board. I just can't do it.
No, there's too many stories you can tell with a bigger board.
Yeah, there is. There is. You just set up an 8x8 board and just play on it in 2x2 sections.
Well, it's like you were mentioned before we started recording the whole model train.
Yep.
That you just, you know, that's like the size of a room and you just want to throw down on it.
Yes.
Well, we mentioned Retro Ray Gun in our little banter here, and something we want to do a little bit different. We wanted to, for our main topic, and we talked about this when we first were talking about doing the show, is kind of focus on different games, kind of break them down to introduce them to you guys listening. And today's episode, we're actually going to start doing that, and we're going to do kind of like a series. We did a series with Twisted, and we'll probably go back to Twisted as that's somebody's addiction.
Because I love Twisted. It's the best game in the world.
But today, since it's our new hotness, our new shiny, we're going to kind of look and overview Retro Ray Gun, and we're going to call this Ray Gun Ramble, right?
So Ray Gun Ramble. There you go.
We jump into it.
Let's do it with the Scooby-Doo transition. You better leave that in there.
Decade of the 21st century, men and women in rocket ships landed on the moon. By 2200 AD, they had reached the other planets in our solar system. Almost at once, there followed discovery of hyperdrive, through which the speed of light was attained and later greatly surpassed. So at last, mankind began the conquest and colonization of deep space. United Planets cruiser C-57D was more than a year out from Earth base on a special mission to the planetary system of the great main sequence star, Altair.
See, now I don't know. Is it under 20 seconds? You're good. You're good for copyrights under 20 seconds. Is it that what it is?
I don't know.
May have to check into that. All right, guys, this is our main topic for today's show, and we're starting a new one. It's Retro Ray Gun, and this is Ray Gun Ramble. So me and Mac just recently discovered this a couple weeks ago, and
We've talked to the developers already about this. And one of the things that really drew us in is just overall this game theme, the models. I mean, there's a lot that drew us in. But as part of this first look at our Ray Gun Ramble, why don't we jump into it, Mac? I mean, this, what was the first thing that kind of drew you into this? Because I think you saw this first, right? I remember you sending me the link.
I did. Let's Ray Gun Ramble. All right. So, yeah, that's what got me. So I'm a big fan of pulp. Mm-hmm. In so far as I love Bob Murch's sculpts. I'm sure anybody out there that if anybody out there is that in listening land does anything pulp, they know who Bob Murch is. He's an amazing sculptor. And of course there's Dave who created the game Pulp Alley. And there's, man, there's a number of other pulp games out there. And there's a style to pulp miniatures that is very distinct. Mm-hmm. You set a pulp miniature on the table and it's just, it's almost like it's got the heroic proportions. It's got the big meat hooks for hands and stuff, but they look so good. And like we had talked about before with a lot of other models, they don't have all of this extra detail on them. So they paint up really fast, beautifully, yeah. But really fast. But when I stumbled on this one, it was sci-fi. And I have struggled and struggled and struggled to find a sci-fi game that I really like outside of 40K. And since I don't really play 40K anymore, there's not, I've tried a few games and there's some that I really like, but with me liking them, there's nobody else around me playing them. And that's Zone Raiders and Star Breach. And we'll talk about those ones eventually too. Don't worry.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they're a very different sci-fi style than Retro Raygun is. And that's because it is, depending on how old you are out there listening, you may have to go to YouTube for this one to see what I'm talking about, but it's very much in the vein of Flash Gordon. Mm-hmm. And it's just phenomenal. Now the Flash Gordon movie you and I grew up with was the one from the 80s.
No.
But this is set in the 50s sci-fi pulp.
Yeah. Yeah,
so it's really set in like 2490, but it's from the perspective of the 50s and the 60s. And so you have all of those colors. You know, you had the 57 baby blue Bel Airs, and you had those peach and cream colored Ford Galaxies and all that kind of stuff. And so that transitions into this game, and that's what's it's such a clean sci-fi.
Yeah, that was one of the things that, like we may have mentioned in one of our other videos and talking about this game is that one of the things that really stood out to us is that overall theme. Yeah, it's sci-fi, but it's not dark sci-fi.
Yeah.
You know, we mentioned 40K. 40K is very grim and dark, yeah. And everybody, there really isn't a total goody-goody in that right. world.
Everybody wants to play 40K, but nobody wants to live in 40K.
Yeah, yeah. And in this setting for Retro Ray Gun is you have your 50s clear cut who's the good guy, who's the bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, and it's geared towards adventure too. You know, it's,
oh absolutely.
And with those classic tropes of, you know, they just want to conquer the universe. You know, very simple plots.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers, you know, and War of the Worlds.
Your classic villain that just wants to conquer. You know, they don't want to do some really dark, you know, evil and thing.
It, having said that classic villain, I think it is important that we point out that no one can ever be as good a Ming the Merciless as Max Sydow was.
Yeah, it is
just
true.
Saying. You guys don't know who he was? Go check out Max Sydow because he's awesome.
He was perfect for that role. And so basically the setting is this is a game that's an action adventure in pulp sci-fi. I mean, that's yep. what they you know, their little tagline for the game is somebody is like, oh, what's this game? Well, this is what you would say, action adventure in the pulp sci-fi. So you have your old school rocket ships from, you know, those old Flash Gordons that had yep.
The Ajax.
Yeah. It's that classic design of what a rocket ship is. You know, yep. It's just the big cylinders, or it has like a ton of engines on it that it really does not need that many engines.
Oh, yes, it does. No, of course it needs that many engines.
But that is basically the setting of the game. And like I said, you got your heroic heroes. You know, and we'll touch more on the factions, but the heroes of one of the ones you got, the Galacteers.
That's right, the Galacteers, champions of the galaxy, join today.
Which is basically, you think about them, you picture your heroes from back then with the big waving blonde hair, yep. Hands on the hips, and they're, you know, they're almost in that Superman pose.
Yep.
Of I'm gonna save the day
with their ray gun, rescuing Dale Arden from Ming the Merciless. That's exactly what it is. And you get to play those types of scenarios. That's kind of the impetus behind the game. That's mm-hmm. that's the reason for it. It's very much it's less of a beating up each other, and very much more of a you're telling the story. You're telling that cliffhanger that. Back in the 50s, the kids would go to the theater to watch, you know, those weekly cliffhangers they were called cliffhangers because you didn't know what was going to happen next week, and it'd leave you hanging in suspense. And that's kind of what you're building in this game through the setting. And it's just fun. And to be honest, it just feels very clean. And I think that, there's so many games out there that, like you said, there's no clear-cut good guy, clear-cut bad guy kind of thing. And it's kind of nice to see that older style of here's the good guys, here's the bad guys. And to me, when I play that game, if I'm playing the bad guys, I really don't feel so bad when the bad guys lose when there's the good guy and the bad guy. Because it's like I'm kind of supposed to lose. I'm the bad guys.
Yeah.
But it was telling a story anyway. And that's just so much fun because Eddie Turbo – for the win. That's all I got to say.
he's already coming up with original characters for this game.
Oh, heck yeah, man. And I got my whole leadership crew.
And I think that's kind of a sign to me of a game that has a good story is when Max starts making up characters to participate in this world. And, I mean, you think about it. This is the kind of thing that is a throwback to when we were kids and we used to play. Oh, here's an example of good versus evil, G.I. Joe.
Yeah, G.I. Joe and Cobra.
You knew who was good and you knew who was bad. I mean, they weren't trying to manipulate and do this, you know. They were just straight up, okay, we're going to conquer. We're going to, you know, steal this so we can do this. And, you know, it was straightforward. And then Joes were just trying to stop them.
Red lasers and blue lasers.
Yeah, yeah. Easy to pick them out, right?
That's right. Red lasers and blue lasers, man.
It gives me that feeling of when you were a kid and you were playing, you know, good guys and bad guys, whether it was G.I. Joe, Star Wars, think of Transformers. You knew
Cowboys and Indians, cops and robbers, whatever you were playing.
It's just classic tropes.
I was a military brat, so we were always playing Marine. You know, that's what we were always playing. And you could pick your bad guys then. Yeah, there was lots of bad guys to choose from.
Yeah, back then. Yeah.
Growing up during the Cold War, if you were the bad guy, you were a Russian. That's all there was to it.
But so let's talk about the way we were breaking this up is some of our favorite things. So a favorite thing of the rules. What was your favorite thing about the rules reading through it?
Okay, so for me, When we jumped into the book was the way the mechanic works. So they call it the ray gun roll off, and essentially it's one dice roll. And I like that. And it's comparing. So Eric's going to roll X amount of dice. I'm going to roll X amount of dice. We compare, high number wins, done. Yeah. No, I roll to hit, I roll to wound, you roll to defend, none of that. And your guys will die a lot quicker.
Yeah.
But the game's super fast and it's intended to be that way. Yeah. So for me, that was what jumped out. What about for you?
I do like the ray gun roll off. I mean, using the D6s, it keeps it fast, so you stay in the story. I think related to the roll off is the simplicity of there's not a whole lot of buffs and minuses in the game, so you don't have a lot of tokens that you have to put down to remember. But with the ray gun roll-off, I like the result tables they have, depending on, you know, what kind of action you're doing, whether there's like two different shoot actions you can take. And that's kind of based on like if the guy that's being shot at is in cover or somewhat cover, and then also brawl attacks. So these three type of attacks have a separate table that with those dice that are left over determine what happens. And yeah. I thought that was kind of neat. I mean, it's a simple 1 through 6, depending on what's left over, what doesn't get canceled out, what's going to happen.
Yeah. And the thing I like about that too, is you're not being burdened with a bunch of charts either. And the appendix in the back of the book has a quick reference for pretty much everything that you need. One of the other nice things that I liked about the rules was, so the two different kinds of fire that Eric talked about was direct fire and indirect fire. So indirect fire would be like chucking a grenade over a wall that you can't see. So if you can't actually physically see your target, you can indirect fire at them, which is really cool. And Battlespace has that same mechanic where you can chuck a grenade over a wall. That would be why I use that verbiage, because I did that in my Battlespace game unsuccessfully, I might add. But the indirect fire will have a range on it. Assuming your guy's only going to be able to throw it so far. However, the cool thing is, since they are ray guns and it's way in the future, it's duck dodgers in the 24th and a half century, you know, since that's what it is, there's no range on the guns.
Yeah.
They so keep it simple. You better not be standing in the open.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I like that. And I mean, there is, even though we're saying it's simple, there is still strategy. And some of that strategy comes in actually the roll-off, you know, and you decide which ones to cancel out. Like one of the results is scattered, which basically means the unit that loses that conflict, they get removed from the board.
Right.
So it's not figuring out, okay, he's got this many wounds. Oh, let's pull a model out of that squad out. It's straight up, they're obliterated.
Yep.
You know, to anything to they're just shocked. And that's like on the lower end of the dice. That's a 3 and a 4, but it's basically, they just lose their activation.
Yeah.
You know, kind of simple thing. So it keeps it quick.
Which was from when we talked to the developers of the game, that's the intention. You want it to be a blazing fast lasers flying and smoke coming up off of the bad guys, because it's the Robot Legion that's going down, not the Galacteers.
Oh man, look at them trash talking already.
But it's supposed to be exactly that, blazing fast and the good guys and the bad guys clashing in the middle of the field, rescuing the princess or shutting down the X-24 space modulator so that it doesn't blow up the planet kind of thing. It's all of those. It's every piece of that you can imagine in every cheesy black and white sci-fi movie you can look up on Facebook or YouTube for free.
And I mean, you can get in a game because of these mechanics of how fast and quick it is. It's not about, okay, who can kill who first. It's basically scenario based, and you can play games, you know, a couple games in a day, you know, maybe a 30-minute game, you know, so you could play maybe 3 games. In a way, that's kind of cool, because if you're the type of guy like I know Mac is, you can come up with a storyline, turn it into a campaign, and run a campaign in a weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. And now the thing about it is too, though, it will scale up. If you want to buy a whole bunch of models, so for me, I bought 2 squads of 5 and then the heroes. That's probably all I'm going to buy for the Galacteers. Well, that's not actually true. There's a couple of special characters that they have in their special character section that I'll pick up later. But that's all that I need for my Galacteers to play the size of a game I want. Now, if I wanted to, I could add a couple of more squads in there and you can play a larger game. Not personally interested in that myself. I like that very small size. Plus, I built a really cool 2x2 board using hex bugs. So if I get too big, I'm not going to be playing on that board, because there won't be enough room to deploy.
Yeah, that stuff couldn't be any more perfect. If you guys haven't seen his board that you built that last week, I think it was.
I think so.
Check out Facebook, either on the Hydra Miniatures fan page or even in Coastal Con. There's a lot of pictures of Mac built this board. What, in like 2 days you got this stuff in two yeah, in a day yeah. And then it's like 2 days later you made this whole board. Dude, that was, man, like a moon base or something for
you gotta, you know, it's the Galacteers HQ, man. You gotta build it. I can't control myself. I have no patience. I am not patient. When I get that stuff, I'm like, let's make it happen, baby. But I'm going to do a terrain video for that one also and put it up on the YouTube channel. So that should be up there probably this week. I'll probably do that this week and okay, get it up there.
So the other thing I wanted to talk about this first part of overview was actually, and we touched a little bit about this, was scenarios. This is the scenarios in the book. I think it comes with 8 or 9 just in the book. And like we said, this is the kind of game that you could easily come up with your own scenarios.
Oh, yeah.
But they're all objective oriented. So the neat thing is that the two forces or three, you could play more than two forces on a board if you're off number, trying to do an objective. And right, the person that does that objective will win that scenario. Forces may not be balanced, but sometimes the ones that are, say, not as heavily numbered still can win. I think that's a neat thing about the story driven aspect of their scenarios. And I also think it's neat, and they actually mentioned this in the book, that it can be the same scenario, maybe varied up by your forces, force size, and then terrain, which I know you are going to be all over terrain. Changing up your terrain can change the way the scenario plays.
And, you know, the great thing about a game like this is that since it's that 50s sci-fi, it can be any planet, anywhere. Yeah. So any of your terrain that you have, you can use it. You can create whatever world you wanted in any way that you wanted with any terrain that you have, because it all fits, because it's that sci-fi crazy 1950s retro feeling. So you do whatever you want. It can be anything from nothing but a blasted gray rock. I mean, heck, you could set up on your 40K board and they land on the planet and they're trying to investigate where these buildings came from. Yeah, jungle.
They have some hints in the book about what do they call it? A beastery. You know, it's just different.
Yeah, the beastiary.
Aliens.
With a bunch of that they make, the aquaclops and several other models.
Lots of plant, like sentient plants that they're like optional things that you can throw in these scenarios, that if your guys get into some kind of terrain that's like, you know, difficult terrain, well, you can throw that, you have to roll a dice and on a certain result, keep in mind D6, so not a whole bunch of dice, D6, yep. Well, a carnivorous plant could reach out and grab your guy and try to eat them and stuff like that. So
yeah,
I think that's kind of neat too. You know, it adds more to the base scenario of, well, we got to get to that base and turn that switch off, you know?
Yep. And if you go over to the Hydra Miniatures fan page and the files section, they do have a short history of the retroverse in there that you can read just to kind of get a feel if you're not ready to pick up the rule book, because there isn't a download for the rule book. So if you want to find out more about the factions, that's one of the ways to do it. They only have in that document the Robot Legion, the Galacteers, and the Valkyrie. Okay. There is another faction which is newer, which is the Imperials, and there is a file in there as well where you can read up on the Imperials, but it's a separate file is the point I was making there.
So there's plenty of little extras that you guys can find on the Facebook, or there's a lot of additional information on their website that you guys can check out. And I think that's pretty good for an overview for our first part for, I think, Retro Ray Gun, our Ray Gun Ramble.
The Ray Gun Ramble. That's right.
So next time, what are we going to do, Mac? We're going to dive into this again for our next episode for everybody. And we're going to kind of take a different look at some of the other elements of the game.
Yes. So we'll walk you guys through basically what a profile is for some of these models. But the part that everybody will want to know, we're going to talk about the factions.
Yeah.
We will, of course, be talking about the best faction, which is the Galacteers. We'll, of course, be talking about them more than all of the other factions, right,
Eric?
I'm just shaking my head. All right. In case you haven't picked up on it yet, I am playing the Galacteers and Eric is not.
He likes the goody-goody two-shoes that tie their shoes nice and, you know, chew
with their mouth closed and
demon bubble gum. And
that's right. That's right.
Yeah. And I like the robot legion and the space Amazons, basically, is what I like to call them.
But you only like the space Amazons because they have man slaves.
Well, no, I think that's a hilarious part of their faction. But
that is a hilarious part.
We'll get into that next episode, I think, along with some of our other favorite things about the different models and factions.
Yeah.
Like they have special properties. So we'll get into that, I think, in the next episode. So if you guys are interested, tune in to the next one where we continue with the Raygun Ramble.
Guys, it is time for Phantom Dice News and what to look out for from beyond. That's right, Phantom Dice section. We're going to mix it up a little bit today. Normally, we'll grab one of the many games that we have dipped our fingers into. Yeah,
that I try to keep up with.
But today, I wanted to talk about something else because I don't know. Would do you technically qualify the smaller terrain and model companies as indie? I guess you would, wouldn't you?
You can, because there's so many out there.
Yeah, I guess you would.
We come across that are, you know, this is kind of like a hobby for them, is creating these things, and they're doing it out of their garage. You know, they have day jobs that they go into an office and do other things, and then they come home. And because they love creating, you know,
they
that's
make stuff for us.
Yeah, and make stuff. And then us rabid fans are like, I need it. Yes. I need it on my table and I need to build it in 24 hours.
That's right. That is right. That is me to a T.
I was going to say, who am I talking about? I don't know.
So today we're going to talk about a terrain and miniature company that I am a big fan of. I discovered them, I want to say it was just over a year ago, and the company is called Crossover Miniatures. They are here in the United States, and the gentleman, Russell Gregory, that runs the place has some really great pulp superhero models. Some of them are actually, since we've been talking about Retro Raygun, there's a particular group of them called the Cryptozoids that are absolutely perfect in Retro Raygun. I have already added some to my collection and painted them. They're on the shelf, just waiting for the arrival of the Zithenians from Hydra Miniatures. Haven't ordered them yet, but I will. But for me, that's not the sweet spot that Crossover Miniatures fills for me.
I know what really gets you going. You know, a lot of us like collecting certain, you know, particular things within a hobby. Like for me, I mentioned earlier, comic books. A lot of us are nerds at heart. We like comic books. And whenever I come across a Doctor Doom or Magneto figure or something, I have to have it. So for you, when it comes to terrain, which you're a terrain guy. Most people that know you know you're a terrain guy.
Yep.
But when you see this kind of terrain, which is
steampunk airships,
he's got to get it. He doesn't even think about it. You don't bat an eye. You just
nope.
Where's the button to click?
I love them, and I'm going to tell you something. So Crossover Miniatures, I have built a lot of MDF terrain. I've built MDF terrain from just about everybody. I've built MDF terrain from companies that are no longer in existence. I've built good stuff, bad stuff, okay stuff, everything in between. And I will tell you this, that the stuff that Crossover makes is some of the best cut stuff I've ever built. And I say that for a couple of reasons. Number one, everybody that's built MDF knows that sometimes when you're putting it together, you start to get soot on your hands because, I mean, let's be honest, they're using a laser to cut wood. So, or medium density fiberboard, whatever, but it's close enough to wood that it gets sooty. Well, there's never any of that on his stuff. I don't know if maybe he wipes down every single piece before he sends it to you. The pieces pop out. I've never had a partial cut through the material. And that's saying something because I have all but one of his airships. And he has quite a few of them. And I have all but one of them. But the piece de resistance.
Yeah, you got that big beast.
I got the Zeppelin. So it seems like, so here's how the story with the Zeppelin went. He ran a Kickstarter. Now this thing is about 6 feet long and it is massive. If you guys want to see it, you can go on the Coastal Con page. There's a bunch of pictures of it there that I've posted. We've played a few battles on it. I mostly use all my steampunk airships for, that's right, you guessed it, Twisted. I do, however, use them for Shadow Sea and Deep Wars as well, because then I turn my airship into a submarine.
They look like they'd be perfect for Pulp Alley, too.
Oh, they are perfect for Pulp Alley. I think there's a couple of guys in the Pulp Alley group that have a couple of them. I won't swear to that, but I'm pretty sure I've seen a couple. But anyway, this thing is 6 feet long, and when I got it, so he ran a Kickstarter. I missed the Kickstarter. Never knew anything about it, actually. And then he posts in, I want to say it was the Pulp Alley group. He throws up a post in there and says, hey, I'm thinking about doing another run of the Zeppelin, but I need, I think he said, 8 or 9 people to commit before I can do it because of the cost, because it's a 6 foot long MDF kit. It's huge. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm all over that, man. I'm there. So I did that and I got it, and this massive box of MDF shows up, right? I was like, I'm surprised they didn't deliver it on a pallet. It was so big. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is going to take forever to build this thing. And I got to tell you, this was one of the easiest kits I've ever put together. Now there was some learning stuff in it because there's a lot of curved stuff because it's a blimp. It's the bottom half of the blimp for those that aren't familiar. So it's basically cut in half so you can play in it. But it went together so easily. I think it took me 4 days to get the whole thing together and paint it.
That's a pretty good hobby project. And you think about people that get the plastic models, you know, and they build their favorite car or jet or even, you know, sailing ship. And these are meant to be kits that you have fun with, and it's relaxing and, you know, you kind of enjoy the actual act of building.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I know I sound like a fanboy. It's because I am. They are easy to put together and they're absolutely phenomenal. I love putting them on the board. Even if we don't actually use them in a scenario, he cuts these great acrylic bases too. So you drop them on the table, you can play underneath them, you can play all around them, you can use them in scenarios. If you like any kind of airships, this is the place to get them. They are impeccable. And the last thing I'm going to say about them is, it's probably not the last thing, but I'm going to say that it's the last thing I'm going to say about them, is the tolerances that he cuts to. What I mean by that is, when you have to stick a peg into a hole, for everybody out there listening that has ever put together a piece of MDF terrain, you know what I'm talking about. When you got to get the rubber mallet out and the wood block so that you can get it together, or you got to
my Dremel tools, always ready for those.
Right. You got to Dremel something off or cut an edge to get something to fit. There is not a single piece on that entire 6 foot blimp, or any of the, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 airships I've put together from Crossover Miniatures that didn't just pop right in. I kid you not. This is not a paid advertisement. I promise.
Yeah.
But I know it sounds like one, but they are for real that good. They are for real that good. So if you guys are into any kind of airships, go and order them all. Yeah. All of them.
And I'd like that they're all scaled to 28 millimeters. So it's heroic scale. You know, you can use it for whatever game, like you mentioned that. And, you know, they also have other terrain on there. If you guys want to just check out the site, he has miniatures. I'm already looking at this little Mothman miniature and, I'm like,
did you put him in your basket yet?
No, not yet. It'll probably be when we get off, but,
but yeah, it's not just me. You guys don't let him convince you that it is.
He's turning me. I blame him corrupting me, but yeah, check it out. Crossoverminiatures.com for all your airship needs.
That's right. All your airship needs. And he did just do another run on the Zeppelin. So another batch of people got it. So you never know. There may be another run on the Zeppelin in a few months.
Yeah, I might have to. Maybe I'll just shoot them a mysterious email and say, you know, I could use a riverboat with the paddles and all. If it's floating in the air, I'm fine with that.
if it happens to be floating in the air.
Just want that multi-liver level Mississippi riverboat. I've always wanted one, so.
Well, that would be the one. He would be the one to cut it after it got designed. I promise you that, because it would be easy to put together. That's right.
Oh, my God.
Old classic flashback game.
All right, guys, we're back for another yesteryear game, a look at of an old classic flash pick game from our past, whether it was something that one of us either used to play in our youth so many, many moons ago, or maybe it's something that you guys played back in your youth. And today, Mac has something that he wants to talk about. We've been starting a list of old games, and he came up with one that was his what do you want to call it? Your
I loved it, man. It was my jam. It was what we played when I was 18. It was the game we played all the time. I was young, active duty, and when we had free time, that's what I played.
That's what it was. Now was so. What did you used to play? We haven't said that yet.
Well, the funny thing is, I'm sitting here looking at our notes for the show, and I'm saying, "Wow, yesteryear flashback." I'm getting old, or this game's not as old as I think it is. But now that I think about it, when that was 30 years ago that I was doing that.
Yeah.
But that game was Warhammer Fantasy Battles.
Okay.
Not the new stuff. Nothing like the new stuff. We're talking Warhammer Fantasy Battles.
Early 90s? Is that when this kind of came out?
Yep.
Okay.
No, well, that's when I was playing, was the early 90s.
Okay.
Yep. Warhammer Fantasy Battles. And man, did I love that game. I had three armies. I played orcs. I played undead. And I played the Bretonians when they came out.
Okay.
And it was a fantastic game. So if anybody out there doesn't know what it is, which would blow my mind if anybody didn't know what Warhammer Fantasy Battles was, is it is Age of Sigmar before Age of Sigmar was Age of Sigmar. Right. This was the old world. And I loved everything about it. I loved the novels, especially the stuff that Gav Thorpe had written. Mm-hmm. So I loved all of the novels that were out there. I loved the world. I loved the RPG. So everything about that fantasy world was just so cool. And in classic Games Workshop style, they had built this amazing and compelling universe that you just wanted to play in, just like they've done with 40K. Whether you love or hate Games Workshop, man, they can weave a story to draw you in and play into their game. They absolutely can. And they did that with Warhammer Fantasy Battles, and I loved it, and I loved everything about it, and I loved orcs because I like dice and I like to buy a lot of them. So for any orc players out there, you know what I'm talking about. Buckets and buckets of dice to roll. And actually, you and I had talked about it a couple of times because you played Warhammer Fantasy Battles too, didn't you?
Yeah, I got into miniatures games like on a regular basis. You know, when we were kids, we got into the old
pewter miniatures in the 80s, the kind that could kill you.
Yeah, the Grenadier and the Ralpartha. Yeah,
but in the, I think the late 90s is when I got into the whole Warhammer Fantasy Battle. There at the mall by our house, there was actually a Games Workshop store. So I was kind of like, ooh, what's this? That sucked me in. Next thing I know, I was buying armies and miniatures. And, you know, I used to like painting them, so I tried them out. I said, let's paint this one. All this, it turned out good. It was fun. So I got another one, and then another one. And the next thing you know, you have enough that you could actually play this game that was built, you know, for these miniatures. And once again, as I always seem to do, is I went towards the darker side, and I went vampire counts.
See, there were no vampire counts when I was playing. You wanted a vampire count, he was just in your undead army.
Yeah, I see.
Vlad von Karstein.
Yep, I see. I got into it right after that. That they must have switched the editions then, and they became their own little faction. And I was in heaven. back then, I loved everything that was vampires. And the fact that they had zombies in their, you know, their armies. I still have a lot of these. And I think I have about 5 different troops of zombies, which were like, what, 20 a piece? So I have probably over 100 zombies that one of these days I should really think about rebasing them and using them for all these other indie games that we play.
Oh, they would be great for Zombicide Black Plague.
Yeah,
because they're already dressed like that.
Yeah.
Now, did you get the plastic ones that you got to build different ways, or were you okay? See, that's nice. Those are expensive these days. Yes, you try to find those bad boys,
and they haven't changed the molds at all yet. They're the same molds, and you may take some pain to this, but after building about 2 or 3, you kind of run out of ideas of how to change them up.
Yeah.
I started buying Empire kits and Bretonians and started kit bashing a lot. So zombie Bretonians and zombie Empire guys with their big puffy pants and stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, though. That's pretty cool.
Their heads are kind of all cockeyed and stuff, and they got arrows in them. So, yeah, that was kind of like when I first started really getting into miniature painting. And their miniatures were so easy to work with. I mean, like you said, Games Workshop quality is to that level that they make it so easy to work with these and build them. And then when it comes to the painting, it makes them that much more enjoyable.
Yeah, they've always been the leader of the pack. And I've said it a million times, whether you love them or you hate them, and frankly, that's for you to decide. I like them. I don't actually play any of the games right now, except for Underworlds. Just got into that, but I still like them. Yeah.
Well, so their models are great, and
in
the sense that, if you guys are like me and Mac, you like picking these models up just for the art sense of them. You know, they're beautiful, and like Mac, he's got the mind that if you guys can think of another way to use that models, like you look at the newer sets with Sigmar, and they have all those the ghosts. I have to admit that I think I bought that set just because I was like, I don't have any ghosts. I don't have any banshees. I can use these easily.
I love those ghosts. Mm-hmm. I bought the ghosts and the skeletons. But of course, I picked up some stuff for Underworlds too. But that was mine for today, was Warhammer Fantasy Battles. I have such great memories of, playing the game. I have some bad memories of trying to build some of the vehicles back when everything was metal. And at the time, I was just really getting into the miniature side of it. I didn't know anything about pinning models or anything like that. And I will end with this. The single greatest piece of my army was in my orc army, and it was my Snotling pump wagon. That was the single greatest model I had in my army. I loved that piece so much. It was the best. And I remember the very, very, very first time I used it in a game. I had my whole painted orc army, but the Snotling pump wagon had just come out, so I hadn't picked it up yet, but I wanted to use it. So at the time, this was many, many moons ago, I was still smoking. So I had an empty pack of cigarettes, which was just about the size of a Snotling pump wagon. And I put that on the table and it was my Snotling pump wagon. And that was the day that I fell in love with the pump wagon. It was the best model ever.
All right. Well, if you guys have any old classic flashback games that you remember fondly and you want to hear us talk about them, maybe we have played them. There's a lot of games that we've played. And you maybe want to let us know about some maybe that we don't know about. Go ahead and feel free to email us at the Gmail, indieinvasion@gmail.com, and tell us about these games. Maybe we'd love to reminisce, you know, about these old games. So, news. What kind of news do we got? What do we got coming up to watch out for, Mac? We got, there's like a ton of Kickstarters coming up, isn't there?
Yeah, there's quite a bit of stuff. So right now there is the Planet Bound Kickstarter, and for those of you who follow us, that is my cousin's game. It's a tabletop RPG just coming out. It's already funded, so now He's just reaching for stretch goals. His big stretch goal, there's only two stretch goals. The first one is a soundtrack to go along with it, sort of a backtrack to go along with the theme of the game, but the second one is actually a really big one. My cousin is an ASL interpreter, and if he hits his second stretch goal, this is going to be the first role-playing game that is going to be, I guess, I don't know, I'm not in the deaf community, the ASL community, but it's going to be the first RPG that is available to the hearing impaired and to the deaf. Yeah. So that's cool. It'll be the first one. That would be super cool.
That would be very big. There's... You know, a lot of us take for granted these games that we play, and especially a role-playing game where you're communicating. And somebody that has difficulties communicating, that's big. You know, they may be interested in that, but they're limited in playing these games. So that's a really big one. So if you guys haven't checked it out, go ahead and please check it out. He's created a very rich world. I mean, 30 yes. some years he's been, you know,
30 years, yep. this
world. So it's very, very deep and rich with what you can do. But what else we got? We got more Kickstarters.
Yes. So
soon, right?
Soon. So we have three coming up. And no definitive dates except for one of them. And I'll give you that one first. That is for Street Wars NYC. By Funky Skull Games. We've talked to Ian before, and we'll talk to him again once the Kickstarter is up and running. But he is doing a Kickstarter to fund the next gang and also some civilian models. And for those of you who haven't heard our interview with him, you can check it out on YouTube. But the game is basically, if you remember the movie The Warriors, it's 1970s gang warfare in New York City. The other one that's coming up is, now this one does not have a definitive date yet, but it will be coming up soon within the next couple of weeks, is for Twilight Chronicles of Anurol. And if you go way back, you'll remember that was our very first,
Indie Invasion
interview. And he will be running a Kickstarter as well. And that is going to be for the Kadeshi, which is a newer faction in the world. And the last one that I'm aware of, and you'll have to add anything on if you know of another Kickstarter, but I think this is the last one. This one will be coming up in the next couple of weeks as well. And this is for Twisted.
Yep. Our wallets are going to be empty, man.
Yeah. So there's a new group of larger based, I believe they're going to be on 50 mil bases. So they're running the Kickstarter to fund every faction getting this super beefy model. So those are the Kickstarters that are coming up. What else do we have that we're plugging that people need to be checking out here?
Don't know if we mentioned or not, for Street Wars, that one we did know the date. It's in
That's right. I'm sorry.
Mid-September. That's actually at time of recording. That's within this week. The 18th, I believe, is what he said, right?
Friday.
Okay. So and those other ones, you guys just if you're not already a member of like their Facebook groups, that's probably the best way to see an announcement on these is, you know, when they're ready to go and push the go button to get the news on that. But the other thing that we wanted to talk about and mention is our friend of the show, Jim, his RPG and Wargame Supply source book that should be coming out this week, I believe.
Yeah, that'll hurt your wallet right there. Not the book, just everything that's in it.
All the ads in it. And I mean, that's a great resource for you guys that are in the hobby, whether it be miniature companies, terrain companies. It's basically he kind of says it's the classic JCPenney's Sears Christmas catalog for us gamers. And it's a free PDF download. You just have to go to the website for the supply source book and kind of sign up like a newsletter type thing. And he sends it to you, you know, once a month. So check that one out. And he also has his Bexham's Bazaar magazine. You've been getting that for a long time, Mac. I recently, last couple of months, finally dove in to get it. It's kind of a throwback to the old Dragon magazines. You get articles in there for role-playing, maybe scenarios for different tabletop skirmish games like Relic Blade.
He's the last one had a Twisted scenario in it. I sent in a Twisted scenario. And yeah, I've been since issue zero. Okay. He did issue zero for free. And that was what sold me, because he averages about 200 pages per month in Bexham's.
Yeah. So, and it's a lot of fun articles in there. Like I said, it's a throwback to, you know, when we were younger and we used to just eat up those gaming magazines like Dragon.
And he has Patreons for both of those.
Okay.
There are Patreons for both of those. You can subscribe, or you can go to Wargame Vault for Bexham's Bazaar and you can purchase it for, I want to say it's $3 on Wargame Vault. Yeah, it's not much at all. It's a digital copy, but boy, how cool would it be if that magazine could go to print like the old Dragon magazine? I'd have them all, every back issue on my shelf.
Yeah, you'd have to build more shelves then.
I'm comfortable with that. I have the skill set and the tools. I am comfortable with that.
And then our very last thing that we wanted to talk about was cons. So as of now, with COVID this year, cons have been very scarce. Everything's been going to digital. And we have one last one that we're kind of holding on tooth and nail, and that is MACE in November 13th through the 15th in North Carolina. We're still hoping that this is going to go off. I know they've had
everything's everything's looking good. They've actually bumped up the numbers that they're going to allow in the hotel. So everything's looking good. Masks will be required. Not a big deal for an opportunity for us to get together and play. Of course, if you don't feel safe with that, do not come, because you have to be comfortable, because we're the people that are going to be there. Everybody just wants to play a game. And if you're not comfortable, you won't have any fun. So
you won't have
just
fun. Be safe. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You be safe. You do what you got to do. But if you do want to come and you're able to, it's in Charlotte, North Carolina. You can check them out on justusproductions.com and you can see the game schedule. We'll be there doing Twisted, and there'll be a lot of other stuff going on as well. So it's going to be fun. And I am praying regularly that COVID will back off even more and we can open that bad boy all the way up.
Yeah, you're doing a demo there, right?
Yep, I'm running Twisted, and depending on what else happens, I may be doing some terrain building stuff as well. But we'll see. We'll see what happens there.
I might be there.
Oh, you better be there.
I'll run around and be paparazzi.
You can be paparazzi. He can paparazzi all day. So guys, I think that's all we have for this episode. It has, as usual, been a blast for you guys to hang out with us as we run our mouths talking about the things that we absolutely love, the games that we absolutely love. And hopefully you guys are popping over and checking out these independent developers, these independent game companies, because they run on us. They do the things for us. They're creating games. They're basically just us, except they know how to write rules and make terrain and models.
And they have a little bit more initiative to take that chance
and
put their creations out there. And we love them for it. It's it's a lot of fun to talk to these passionate creators. And we've always said we have our little group of gamers, and we all support each other, whether yep. it's these independent companies or it's, you know, your buddies, your gamer buddies that talk to each other from different states, right?
Absolutely. From different states. That's very important. But in all of this for Indie Invasion, do not forget that the most important con on the whole planet, all right, maybe not the most important con on the whole planet, but I am extremely biased, is CoastalCon 2021 mm-hmm. coming up in February. So we will, again, I will have many, many more details for you come October. That's when I'll be able to secure the venue. And we are hoping to secure some of these independent developers to come and show off their games. I've got at least three or four that are possible. I got a couple that are almost definite, more than possible. We'll say that. So it should be a lot of fun. It should be a whole lot of fun. We'll have all kinds of stuff going on. We do have a website. You can get to that through the Indie Invasion page, and you can get to that through the Coastal Con page as well. And it's not terribly fancy. I made it myself, so I'm proud of it, but it is CoastalTEX.com. Don't ask me why. I didn't assign the domain name for it, but that's what it is. You can get over there and check it out, kind of poke around and check out some of the links we have to some other people.
Yep.
And you can also, once this is up, you can find it on Podbean, Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, Pocket Cast, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and TuneIn, because we are trying to invade everywhere.
Yep. And if you guys want to support us, help us out, check us out on Patreon/IndieInvasion. We got a couple different tiers in there that if you guys want to contribute to the show, it helps us keep the lights on. And if you had any questions or comments, feel free to email us at indieinvasion@gmail.com. And of course, the biggest thing to help us out is tell a friend about the show, share, spread the love, right? That's what we're all about, spreading the love. That's right.
And click that follow button on Podbean because it makes us happy.
Yeah, yeah. I think I said that wrong. I should have said it more like this, spread the love.
There you go. There you go. You had to, you got to do your Barry White before we leave.
Barry White.
All right, guys, don't forget, when you're out there playing those games and supporting all those independent game companies, to prepare yourself for the invasion.
We'll talk to you later, guys.
Bye. Oh, no, I was going to put the Flash Gordon theme, but we might get in trouble for that.
Can you sing it? You sing it. You can do it that way. You can do Flash. It a cappella.
I don't even know. Was that even it? I don't even remember. Oh, my gosh. That's going to end up on the end. I just know it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. You're welcome. Yeah. I'm happy to help.
Well, you got to have, what is it? Was it a bass beat that they had in that? The Queen music? Doom da doom da doom da doom da doom da doom, and then they would do that.
There you go.
Flash. Ah. I was watching some Flash Gordon last week.
It was Queen.
Yeah.
All right, you ready? Coffee chugger? Cthulhu?
Lukewarm, perfect.
Lukewarm, perfect better be on the end of this.
As long as they don't think that we're lukewarm. Hot, baby. Hot.
Hot. Hot. All right. You ready?
Yeah.
All right, guys. All right. Well, dang it. I just rambled on the Phantom Dice, and now I'm going to ramble on the flashback.
I'll bring us in.
Okay.
You're fine.
Well, thanks. You're kind of cute, too. Fine. You didn't mean it like that. Couldn't resist that one.
That's like, what's too easy. What's the old term when somebody says you're fat? Not F-A-T, but P-H-A-T.
Oh, P-H-A-T. Yeah. That's right.
Oh my God. All right, I'll jump into it after our little
okie dokie. But you have the smooth, dulcet tones. I just have the scary voice. That doesn't accomplish the same thing. That's only good for reading the scary stories. I'm just glad there's no happy stories in the twisted book. I'd be like, I don't know how I'm going to read that.
So should I, when I start like the Barry White and go, oh, baby, baby, baby. Yeah.
Well, you should definitely do that if we do any more Street Wars stuff. Because then it's just so much more appropriate. Probably work too with Urban Manhunt a la Escape from New York.
Yeah.
You know, so that kind of thing. Then you're not Barry Whiting, you're Isaac Hazing, because, you know,
that's right.
Got to, because he's in it.
Because he, well, Isaac Hayes was the...
The Duke.
The Duke, yeah.
The Duke.
The Duke of New York.
That's right. All right, here we go.